It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to the next room. I'm just always pleased to be here and to be able to share with you interesting people that I find along my life journey. And I love it when I get introduced to individuals through other friends, because that's kind of how it works. It's like, oh, do you know someone? Or, oh, I have someone you should speak with. And Reverend Richard, you know, quickly turned me on to two lovely women, Rosella, who I spoke with, and you heard the interview a couple weeks ago. And now I'm going to speak with Anne Murphy. And Anne is also a retired Unity minister. She also served two congregations in West Virginia. And prior to that, she had another lifetime ago, a different career. She was 30 years as a registered nurse and worked in hospitals as well as hospice care. So I had a nice conversation with her, and I thought, she's going to be perfect for the next room. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Anne Murphy. How are you?
I'm terrific, Jane. Thank you so much for having me. Yes.
Well, I'm just happy that you would take the time, because I know it's, you know, sometimes when someone calls you and says, hey, do you want to come on my radio show? It can get a little nerve-wracking, sort of like, well, what are we going to talk about? And you just have such a great, you've had just two really powerful careers that really lean into this show, because this show is really all about death, dying, grief, transition, and what's next. What is next in the next room, belief systems, and all of that good stuff. So I thought you'd be a perfect candidate to speak with me, and I'm grateful that you agreed.
Well, thank you so much.
So now let's talk first about your ministry. You're a retired Unity minister, and how many years did you actually serve congregations?
Well, I was ordained in 2004, and I left my ministry in 2018, so it was 14 years. I had two ministries. Each of them were under 7 years. The second one I pioneered in Unity in Berkeley Springs, West Virginia.
Wow. So you actually got that up and rolling off the ground?
Well, I got it up and rolling off the ground. Unfortunately, it's not continuing. There wasn't enough energy to continue it, but I had a lot of fun for almost 7 years. So, and we had a nice congregation, and we had a lot of fun together. And the group is still meeting, but they're meeting more as a study group.
Yeah,
they're not an official Unity ministry any longer.
What was your, you know, what was your motivation behind leaving a career as a nurse to become a minister?
Well, in going back to the 90s, in 1992, I had an experience with cancer. I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, man.
And at that time, I found Unity. I found a small Unity congregation near my home where I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, where I was raising my family. And the Unity belief system gave me a new view of myself, that I wasn't just this body that has a disease, that I had a different identity. I was a child of God. And so that new concept really made a difference for me as I experienced my cancer experience, going through the chemo and the treatments. I was able to learn a new new way to pray, a new affirmative prayer, a new way to think of myself, a new way to meditate and visualize, and it made a big difference in my life. Hmm. And so I pursued the Unity teachings and took classes, and I was continuing to work as the registered nurse. And then in 2001, the nursing unit that I was working on, we were told that the unit was going to close. And so in the back of my mind, I'd always had this thought or this aspiration or dream that perhaps at some time in my life I could be a Unity minister or a Unity teacher or something along those lines. And so I thought, well, maybe the universe is telling me that this is my opportunity to pursue that. And so I took it into prayer, and I figured the universe or God would tell me in some way. And so a couple of days later, I was at a book group. I used to go to a book study group at a Borders book store, and it was a Spirituality Discussed was the name of the book group. And so after the book group was over, I was just a participant. The leader of the book group came up to me and said, "Ann, have you ever thought about being a minister?"
Wow.
So I thought, well, that was my first day. So I had three similar messages like that. So with that, I sent in my application and went through the interview process and was accepted. And I started my ministerial education in 2002 and was ordained in 2004.
Wow. That's really cool. I love when individuals, and I've met so many recently, they pivot. You know, they've had this lengthy career, whatever it is, and maybe it was fulfilling, but then they come to a point where there's a fork in their road, and everyone that has done it successfully has said exactly, very similar to what you just said, is that they asked their higher power or God for a sign. Kind of like, okay, what am I supposed to do now, you know? And here you got it, you know, 2 days later, you know, did you get goosebumps or did you just go, all right, I'm on my path?
Yeah, I kind of knew it was affirmed. Well, I waited for two more signs, actually. I guess I was skeptical. But I did get two more affirming signs, and then I proceeded.
What were the other two?
Well, I had to ask my minister, of the church that I attended to recommend me. So I didn't know if she would feel I was ready or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked her, and she said she was wondering when I was going to come and ask her.
Wow.
That was very affirming. And then some of my coworkers, when we were working together, we said, well, we'd have to have reunions, you know, and somebody said, well, somebody will get married and we'll come together at the wedding, or we'll have a shower or something like that. And then they said, Ann is probably not going to get married, because she'd probably be officiating the ceremony.
Wow. How cool. That is great.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I'm listening, God. Here I go.
Yeah, right. Then I knew for sure. Yeah, not that it was an easy journey. It wasn't an easy journey. It was a difficult journey in a lot of ways. You know, spiritual growth is not comfortable.
No.
Yeah.
No. I don't think it's meant to be comfortable. How else do we learn and grow if we don't go through those really uncomfortable patches? I was just thinking that yesterday, because I just more recently went through a difficult time where I was kind of down and just sort of like, what is this all about? Kind of having one of those. And I broke through to the other side. And now I just feel so good. And there's so much more clarity. But we need that. I really, truly believe we need to have those moments to have the other side, to be able to really experience the full spectrum.
Right, I agree. Yes, I do. I agree. Yes.
Well, you are you're a fascinating woman, because two of your careers. My mother had always said to me that I missed my calling. I should have been a nurse. And you know, by the time you know that rolled around, it was sort of like, might be a little bit long in the tooth here to go back to nursing. And being on your feet all day, and it seems to be thankless. I'm in awe of all of my friends that are in nursing and family members. It's really quite a profession. And then the other one is you know, being a reverend, being a minister, and helping people along their spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
Two really awesome careers. So now, I know that you've had something happen that you went through a really difficult time with grief. Would you mind sharing that with us?
Oh, no, no. First, I'll say that my job, after my nursing unit closed, I took a job with hospice, and that I did that a year while I was preparing to go to seminary. And
man, how was that?
No, I loved it. It was a very wonderful experience because it took you away from the technology that is so prevalent in the hospital, and it put you back into what I call the heart of nursing, where you're dealing with one-on-one with the patient and the family, and you can make it more holistic, mind, body, spirit, and that's the whole hospice concept is, mind, body, spirit. And so it was a very good experience and a good preparation for ministry as well. Yeah.
You didn't find it sad to have to be with people in their final moments or be with the family for comfort?
Well, it's sad, but it's also feeling that you're making a difference. Like, I think, I used to think that we were the midwives for the dying. We brought them comfort, and the whole hospice team, we would be able to make it a transition that was peaceful. And generally, once the patients go through and the families get to the point of acceptance, then their hearts are open and they're very open to any interventions or ideas that you have as well. I mean, occasionally you have the difficult situations, but overall, it was only 1 year, but it was a very good experience, and I hold it forever in my heart.
Yeah, I think hospice workers, I mean, talk about angels on earth. They're just, it really does take an extraordinary human being to do that type of work, to do that type of care, and to be there in those situations. It's really beautiful. Well, that's cool. So that was a good transition from being an RN to a year of hospice before you started your ministry.
Correct. Before I went to seminary.
Seminary. Okay, so now you're a retired Unity minister after serving a couple congregations. What are you doing? What are you doing with your time?
Well, I'll tell my story that I moved down here.
Please
with
do.
My husband, Hank. I met him when I was in my first ministry in West Virginia, and it was an unlikely, love that I found when I was in my 60s. But we had a very good relationship for 12 years, and then when we moved down here, he became sick, and within 6 months of moving down here, he died of a brain tumor.
Mm.
So it was a very it was a traumatic experience in a lot of ways. It was, the moving, the retirement, and the illness, and then ultimate passing of my husband was difficult.
So yeah, so one minute you two were happily married, you're moving down south to retire, so you can knit and he can fish, and then he gets sick and dies.
Correct.
Just wow. I mean, how incredibly hard was that? And you probably didn't have you didn't have your community around you because you had just moved to a new environment.
Yeah, I was very blessed that I was able to connect with a Unity congregation. There's a small Unity congregation in Gulf Shores, Alabama, which is the next town from where we live. And I also had, the reason we chose this area is I have a daughter and son-in-law and some grandchildren and great-grandchildren down here. So I did have the support, and my son-in-law happens to be an internal medicine physician. So that was helpful. So we did have some supportive family, and we had just started to make some connections with the church. But it wasn't like we had the long-term connections that we had back in West Virginia.
Yeah.
That part of it was difficult.
Did your hospice training assist you with Hank's passing? Were you able to use that training?
I think my spiritual beliefs helped me a lot more than my hospice training.
Okay.
that he also, he was 79 years old, so he felt he was very, he didn't really fight it. I mean, we did pursue the radiation, which they give you promises, you know, that it's going to extend your life, and we had a lot of hopes for that. However, that didn't transpire. But he was very accepting. He didn't really fight it, or he was accepting, and he was able to make experience some healing in his own life. He was able to reconcile with his son, who he had been alienated from for a number of years, and he was able to connect with family members before he passed. So it was, in a lot of ways, it was a peaceful passing. And he was pretty much alert up until the end, and he was, you know, pretty much pain-free throughout the experience. So,
well, that's a huge blessing.
Yeah, so that was a blessing. It was the challenge was the giving up of the dream that we were going to have some time together, enjoying our retirement, and mm-hmm. sadness about that. And of course, sadness about losing him, of course, but he was accepting, so that was helpful to me, and to everybody around us.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? It's like we go through this life experience, and when something occurs like that happened with Hank, you realize, you know, every moment you wake up and you're feeling good, that it is a blessing. It's like, oh, okay, thanks. I'm still here. I feel good. You know, it really motivates you to kind of really live your life and not maybe put things off or wait for things, you know, kind of get busy living, get cracking, as my mom would say. We just don't know. We don't know, you know, my dad used to say, when your number's up, you're gone, you know, and we don't know when that is. We're all going to die. It's just a matter of how and when. And so, being peaceful about it and living each day to the fullest, I think, is at a premium.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, where do you go now? Like, what, you know, you said your spiritual life really assisted you more so than your hospice training. Can you expand on that?
Well, I believe that we're more than our physical bodies, you know, that life continues in a different form, so to speak. And so that was, you know, so I know that the love that connected us is still there. It's not, you know, it's just not in the physical form, that I'll always, you know, be able to hold Hank in my heart, and his life continues in some different form, some different energy form. So that helped me. And also I had the support of my spiritual community down here, and also my spiritual community back in West Virginia. They would send cards and call and, you know, let us know that they were thinking of us. And so that was very helpful to have that support.
Yeah we really, all of us need that with grieving. Yeah. Grieving is a really difficult beast to conquer. And I don't know if we ever really conquer it. It's just a matter of learning how to live with it. And
process.
Yeah, it really is a process. So speaking of that energy form that you say that, you know, your spirituality, you know that he lives on in another form. What do you think happens when we do cross, when we die and we go into the next room, so to speak? What's going to happen?
Well, I think that we have like a life review. I don't think we go before God and are judged or anything like that. I think that perhaps as we transition over, that we have a life review and we realize all of the mistakes we've made, perhaps, but also realize that we're more than those mistakes. And then perhaps we'll, you know, fuse into oneness if we've, you know, achieved mastery, which most of us don't achieve mastery. And I believe that we have the opportunity to come back and complete, you know, those, some of the tasks that perhaps we didn't accomplish in this lifetime. You know, that's what I believe.
I love it. Well, good. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's something I'm always curious, and I always get so many different answers. Everyone has, you know, they have a different way of going about it and a different thought process, and truly, who really knows, right? So,
we
will someday, and then go, oh, cool, I got that part right, but I was way off base over here, you know? Who knows? But, yeah, thank you for sharing that with me. It's, I love these conversations. It's always a gift to me when somebody is willing to come on the show and talk about what they're going through. So how long has Hank been gone?
It was a year in February. He died the 27th of February.
Wow. He's only, you're just nicely, you know, still, you're still in the thick of the grieving process, I would imagine.
Well, it comes and goes, you know. I mean, it's, they say the first year is the hardest. I don't know. You know, the holidays and the birthdays and anniversaries are still hard.
Yeah.
It's, it is, you know, it is what it is. I tell people I'm creating a new normal. I'm creating a new normal for myself.
There you go. Okay. So my next question is, do you have conversations with Hank?
Yeah, sometimes I have conversations with Hank. Yeah. Yeah, I do. Especially like at night. And sometimes I feel like he answers me, you know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, just get still and get quiet and you know, because there's so many, I've got several different people that I've interviewed that truly do feel we can just kind of plug in because it's just we're energy and we change forms. And so there, you know, there is a way to connect if we're able to get quiet enough to listen, sort of like just listening to God, too. Isn't that what that is?
Yeah, right.
Be still and know that I am.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, good. Are you still? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that I think that another way that we honor and we keep them alive is when I did two memorial services for Hank. One of them I did down here in Alabama with the help of my ministers, and one I did back in West Virginia. I did it myself with my musicians from my church there in Berkeley Springs. And I, at the one in Berkeley Springs, I asked people about the traits that Hank, that they remember Hank for. And I said that that's how he lives on. He lives on in when we can acknowledge those traits in ourselves. You know, like he had a wonderful sense of humor. He had a wonderful sense of courage. He was very present with people. He knew how to be present with people. He really knew how to love, like not a sentimental love, but his sons shared how he could be firm, a firm sort of love. And he had a gentle, he was a big man, 6'2", but he had a gentleness about him that I used to tell the story that if we had an enclosed porch at one of our homes in West Virginia, and if a bird would fly in there, and it would make me really nervous, and he could just go gently with his hands, and the bird would come into his hands, and he could just bring it outdoors. And
I
so
love that.
He can, you know, honor those traits in ourselves and develop them in ourselves, where then Hank is living on in us. So that was an important concept, I think.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. I had a great visual of Hank with his big hands and a little bird just flying into him. Hank the Dr. Doolittle. I love that. That's
great. I did the prayer of St. Francis for that. I did for each little trait, we lit a candle and then did some sort of a prayer. So I did the prayer of St. Francis for that one.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's really cool. Yeah, just a little while ago, you said a phrase that my sister Lynn used to always say, it is what it is. And I used to get so frustrated because, you know, it was difficult enough dealing with her cancer and knowing that my big, strong, beautiful rock of a sister was going to no longer be here at some point. And she used to just say, Janie, it is what it is. And then after she left for the next room, I realized, you know, how it was very zen-like for her to accept that and to say that, like that it's kind of a que sera sera, you know? And then when I was up, I was on a girlfriend trip up to Pismo Beach with three of my girlfriends, and we were just having a little getaway, and we were shopping. It's Pismo's this great little central California town right on the beach, kind of funky. And we went into this store, and it had really cool, fun T-shirts, and there was one black T-shirt, V-neck, with sparkles all over the front, and I looked at it, and the phrase said, "It is what it is." And I'm like, well, there's my birthday gift to myself. And so I bought it. So the phrase that used to frustrate me that she would say is now, you know, I'm it's emblazoned on my chest when I wear her shirt. So,
yeah,
I think those are signs. I really do. I get them all the time. And this, you know, I talk about it all the time. I get signs from my mother. I get signs from my dad and my sister and really good friends that have crossed. And you know, whether or not you believe that, it doesn't matter, but it matters to me and I believe it. So it's okay. And I think that that's a key thing, is that we need to know that by, you know, by having this life experience and being with people that we love so much, like you and your relationship with Hank, that it does live on and that it's okay. And it's important to keep that spirit, that energy, that memory alive.
Mm-hmm.
So important.
Yeah.
Well, good. So what are you up to these days? Are you keeping busy, all the grandkids and the great-grandkids?
Well, I did have three great-grandchildren down here, and I used to babysit for them a lot. It was really fun. I feel that not many people get to know their great-grandchildren, so I felt very blessed.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, so two of them moved to North Carolina, the two boys, and so I just have one, the little girl, Audrey, down here now. They just moved a few months ago, so I do have my daughter and her husband and my granddaughter and great-granddaughter, so I do spend time with them, and I do, I am active with the church. We just do online services, and occasionally I'm invited to do, there's two Unity churches in Baldwin County, Alabama, the county I live in. So I am asked occasionally to speak. I do, you know, record them on Facebook Live. And so I've done about three or four since the COVID virus. We also do a Zoom book study. We're presently doing white fragility for the Black Lives Matter, you know, experience, and that's been very good. We've had people actually join us from around the country. We've had people from here in Baldwin County, Alabama, and people from somebody from California and Michigan and New York, and so it's been about 10 people studying this book. We do that on Wednesdays. I just did that this morning. And my new thing is to help Richard with his show, being a producer.
Well, good. I love that.
So that's been fun. I mean, it's been a little frustrating. You can probably relate to it, calling people and not having them return your calls and things like that. But it occupies my time. I do watercolor painting. I started doing that in around 2011 in West Virginia. I worked with two teachers. I continue doing that on my own. I basically make like birthday cards for people. I do small little watercolor paintings as birthday cards.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's super thoughtful.
Garden. I have a large yard here, so I'm trying to create a nice garden. And it's been the COVID garden, you know, working in the yard because you can't go anyplace.
Right. You know, but, it, you know, that has, a lot of us have, you know, kind of revisited our homes as our sanctuary instead of always, you know, on the go. And now it's just, you know, I say that I've spent a lot of time in our backyard, and I love it anyway. I'm kind of a garden girl. So it's been a lot of fun to be able to go harvest. I'm going to go harvest. And for me, that's picking my basil and my tomatoes for a salad.
So, yeah.
But it's a great feeling to grow your own produce, and we've got a couple citrus trees. We're getting close to the end of the show. I do want to touch on, in my estimation, a very important topic, and that is the Almighty God. What is your definition of God?
Oh, how do you define something, all that is? Something that all that is. The one power and one presence active in the universe and active in my life. God the good. Omnipotent, omniscient, everywhere present, all-knowing, all-loving, non-judging, present in everyone. That's how I would define God.
Well, there you go.
All that is.
Beautiful. You were thinking you were going to stump yourself, and then you just took off with a beautiful description. So, bravo.
Thank you.
That was awesome. Well, I am very pleased that you would take time to speak with me today. My guest is Ann Murphy, a retired Unity minister who served congregations in West Virginia, 30-year career as a registered nurse, and she also worked in hospice, and a recent grieving widow who seems to be doing very well. And, you know, I'm sorry for your loss. I didn't realize it was that it was so soon, that it was only, you know, just nicely a year ago. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing all your thoughts with us today.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it so much. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so glad, Ann. Well, good. Well, we'll be in touch, and I appreciate you coming on The Next Room.
Yeah, God bless. Yeah, bye-bye.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.